So when you walk out there, not only are you so close, literally 7 feet away from Barbara Corcoran and Kevin, and they're staring at you. And the problem is, you get out there, it's quiet on set, so you can hear a pin drop. You're standing there for probably 3 minutes while they mic you up. They put the mics in place. They get all the cameras in place. So you're standing there probably for 3 minutes in front of the sharks, five feet away. You're not saying anything. They're not saying anything. They don't have any cell phones to distract them. They're just looking at you. They're looking at your prop display for 3 minutes. It was that 3 minutes felt longer than the entire hour and a half pitch.
Hey everybody, Corey Mortensen, host of the Join Your Podcast here. On this week's episode, I am so excited. I have my friend Junior Desnor, who is a serial entrepreneur out of the Dallas, Texas area, and he is also a deal recipient on the show Shark Tank. He got a deal from both Barbara Corcoran and Kevin O'Leary, and his show is one of my favorite episodes to ever watch, not only just because I know him, but because his presentation is so good. And Barbara even commented that he was one of the best salesmen, the best speakers that have come through, and she really commended him on that. So I would recommend everybody go find him, Junior Desnor, Shark Tank episode. I can't remember what season or episode it is, but go look it up, and it's a huge inspiration to watch him in action. But I have him, we did a Zoom call, I have him on my YouTube channel as well, but here is the audio, obviously, that you guys are tuning into on whatever it is that you're listening on. Thank you so much again for being a listener. I appreciate everybody that is tuning in and has showed so much love and support. Continue to do that, continue to support the show, continue tuning in and sharing it. Please, please, please share as much as you can. I want this to reach as many people as possible. It's easy, it's free. Just hit the link, just hit share, put it on wherever. But anyway, without further ado, here is the next episode of the Join Your Podcast with Junior Desnor. Junior, welcome to the Join Your Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of, I know, your busy schedule. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no problem, man. Pleasure to be here, dude.
Yeah, so for the people at home who don't know who Junior Desnor is, He was a guest on Shark Tank, and he got a deal with, it was Barbara, correct?
Barbara and Kevin, yeah.
Barbara and Kevin, yeah, double deal. And so I want him to talk about his story there, but also what he was doing before, how he got his start in entrepreneurialism, and kind of what he's doing now to catch us up and go full cycle. But Junior, for the people at home who maybe don't know who you are, would you please kind of introduce yourself and let them know a little bit about your background?
Yeah, man. So my name is Junior. I am, how old am I today? I'm 36, right? Wow. So in some circles, an old man at this point. I'm a Dallas kid, man, born and raised. Went to a couple of private schools here in Dallas and went off to Texas Tech. Probably a month into my freshman year, I started my very first business out in Lubbock. We started a party supply company catering to all the freshmen at Tech that weren't rushing or pledging at the time, right? Which were a lot. So that was our first business. Literally that business took off. We simply supplied, security guards. We supplied, DJs, and at the time, it was a weird thing to have a DJ at a house party. You know what I mean? We were one of the first to do that. Just a little more organization and process. Now that I look back at that time in my life, so just the way we got our business off the ground back then is still the same fundamentals that I use today. So,
and what year was that when you were doing all that?
So let's see. This was 2002. So the year of just the year after 9/11. It was the year after 9/11. So there was an increase in people going to going to in-state school. So with that increase, Tech had a shortage on dorms on campus. So you could apply to have a waiver to live off campus freshman year. So I applied. And then me and a couple of buddies from high school, we rented a house on, I think it was 15th and V, 15th, so right there in, you know, right by Tech, a little dump house. But immediately, since I was one of the few that got lucky to have that approval my freshman year, one of the things I noticed right away is, and a lot of people do that don't rush, is your first month or two of school while everyone else is rushing, you know, everyone's trying to get their bearings of college. You know, you can't really go to the bars, and if you're not rushing, it's, you know, it was harder back in the day. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't Facebook, there wasn't, you know, all the stuff that there is now, social media wise, to know where it's popping. So we were, me and my roommate at the time, we were able to put a little organization, a little word of mouth, you know, just some old school flyers. You know, we would get 1,000 flyers made, you know, on campus, and then hand them out for people to come to the party. And sure enough, they did. And that's where, quote unquote, the junior story really began. We built that business and we sold that business. We actually kept the business, and the business did well. So imagine being a college kid, and me and my partner, I think each our first year made 20 grand. You know what I mean?
Nice for a college kid, man.
For a 19-year-old pulling in 20 G's, dude, partying is I mean, that's holy grail, dude. So
yeah, you really reinvested back into the business there.
Yeah. So we did that, and then what did we do? And then immediately, literally, you know, we were roommates at the time, just, you know, super pumped. We're, you know, balling, you know, for an 18-year-old on campus, so it was a lot of fun. But at the time, the popular show on TV was a show called Flip This House. And we would always watch it, and we said, well, dude, let's do it. Let's try it. So we got suited up. Obviously, being naive and just young, we went to Plains Capital Bank, we went to Bank of America, and then we went to maybe, I think, Wells Fargo, all by campus, just saying, hey, we want a loan, you know, not understanding the mortgage process or how it worked, you know, and obviously got turned down. We learned a little bit, but my roommate's dad at the time saw how serious we were taking it, and he said, hey, I'll be your bank. So we were 19 years old, we had a little bit of cash. And we found a property on 91st and Indiana. And 91st and Indiana, I think we bought it for, I think it was on the market for 85 grand. We bought it for 75 grand. And he agreed to give us the 75 grand. And then we used, I think, 25 grand to renovate the house of our own money. So we were in it for 100 grand. I think we sold it for like 115, you know. Yeah. So we made, I think, another 7K each. And it sold crazy fast, like within, I don't know, 30 days, 30 to 60 days or so. Nice. So then that's when the wheels came off, dude. So not only, you know, we started flipping houses over and over and over again while we had our party supply business. My junior year, we sold the party supply business to just some other young dudes. I think they were freshmen or sophomores at the time. And then we focused on real estate. So we bought more and more houses all over Lubbock, some new, some old, some in, you know, we sold to college kids, other homes we sold to just Lubbock families. And then what did we do? And then we moved to the depot. So we started buying some warehouses. So we bought a warehouse. I can't remember, you know, who knows what the club is called now, but I think it was 13th and Avenue E. You know, we bought a couple warehouses. We developed some warehouses and leased them out to a couple nightclub operators. We took an old dry cleaners downtown, and we turned it into three condos that we leased out. So imagine just being a 21, 22, 23-year-old, you know, looking at real estate contracts, looking at leases, doing construction and learning, just all of that learning that you do, just real world, you know, learning that you could do at such a young age completely ruined me for life when it comes to being scared for being out of my league. You know what I mean? Because we easily could have been talked out of doing some of these dumb things. But both of these things are great. My partner, my ex-partner that I started all this, those deals with, was the best man at my wedding. Great friend of mine. He's actually down in Cedar Creek near Austin. He owns, I want to say, 12 car washes that are each bringing in, you know, half a mil a year, you know. So So he's doing well. So we both stayed on the entrepreneurial journey. So that was really my Lubbock experience. I moved to Dallas and kind of kept the real estate thing going. Created my first company called Level Properties, which was essentially a company built on going into the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was a predominantly Black neighborhood that was right by the wealthiest neighborhood in Highland Park. The story about that particular neighborhood is it was developed as the neighborhood for all the housekeepers and nannies of Highland Park. And my grandpa, that's where he built his house when he moved to Dallas. So it was for years and years. But there was a major gentrification kind of movement going. This is right before the bubble burst in 2007. So I moved to Dallas and I had all these contacts. Obviously, I see developers trying to get in this neighborhood. So since I knew all of the old people, because I was one of the kids riding my bikes up and down the street my whole life, I had an opportunity to go to them and with my newfound real estate experience, essentially found a way to get them to agree to have me represent them to these big developers. So I graduated Tech. Let's see, I was 23 years old. And then by the time I was 25 years old, I was meeting with some of the biggest developers representing, I want to say at the time I had 80 properties under contract in the neighborhood. So imagine being 25 and you meet with these developers and say, hey, instead of going door to door trying to get all these properties, I could sell you 80 of them today. You know what I mean? At X price. So it was an incredible opportunity and a learning experience there, putting a business plan together, understanding how to pitch, different people from different demographics, from different backgrounds, and then pitching it to big developers and understanding what they want. Unfortunately, the bubble burst in the middle of that. But what happened was some of those families, even though I didn't sell the big, city blocks at a time, the people in the neighborhood that I convinced to sell their property still wanted to sell their property. So I turned that opportunity, even though I didn't have the one huge sale, I turned it into listings, right? So right off the bat, I started my real estate agent, quote unquote, career with, millions of dollars worth of listings, and that's what kind of helped me propel myself as one of the young top agents in town. I had my own group. I started off at Keller Williams. At that point in time, it only took 2 years to become a broker. So I paid my dues for a couple of years at Keller Williams, then started Level Properties, which is still my main real estate and construction arm today. I still have it. So Level Properties now, it started out as a property that assembled properties. Then it turned into a real estate group, then a real estate brokerage firm, then real estate consulting. And now I just use it for real estate investing, construction. And now starting in 2021, my goal is my last single family flip house is going to be in 2020. So this year, I think we're wrapping up our final two properties, but then all of next year and beyond is going to be multifamily apartment complexes is the goal for Level Properties. So Level Properties will turn into that. But going back to your original point of Shark Tank, obviously when you're a real estate agent, and you may be able to relate to this, you're touring a lot of properties, you're opening up a lot of Supra lock boxes. I saw an opportunity for just a more efficient way to do things. So essentially, the same kind of mindset is, hey, let me invent a product. Obviously, I've never invented anything before. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a software developer. So I said, let me create a product and see if I can market it and sell it. It was really just a challenge to myself. And obviously, I used some of my monies that I made in real estate and flipping some homes to really self-fund this crazy idea to create a product. Created that product. Designed it, sketched it, found a mechanical engineer to render my drawings, to get me some 3D prototypes printed. Then I hired a mechanical engineer to put some gears and some pulleys in it. I hired an electrical engineer to put all the guts and the brains in it. And next thing you know, a year later, I'm getting real prototypes made and I have an opportunity, obviously, to grow the company. So I applied for Shark Tank, was fortunate enough to get on Shark Tank and have a pretty good showing on Shark Tank, you know, to where I spent about an hour and a half pitching to the sharks, and I was fortunate enough to get a deal from Barbara and Kevin, but then also have a form a really good relationship with Mark Cuban as well, off camera. So incredible opportunity, obviously. And at that time, I think my year was a year that I think Shark Tank had its peak viewership, you know. So there were a lot of people tuning into Shark Tank, and Shark Tank, you know, there's so many great companies that go on Shark Tank, to be honest with you, that just get obliterated, you know what I mean? And unfortunately, sometimes Shark Tank can backfire for certain businesses. In my case, it was great. You know, it was an opportunity for us to showcase the product, showcase ourselves. After Shark Tank, we got crazy interest from several venture capitalists and different funds. And we ended up raising a couple million, just not directly from Shark Tank, but because of Shark Tank put us on a larger platform. And we're able to get products manufactured. We're selling on Amazon, selling to Walmart, in Home Depot online. And now we're licensing the technology to several other companies, so they can either use our product or use the brains of our product. I still own the three fully issued utility patents, which is super, super valuable in this space. So I think that paid off. And I think there's opportunity for income from that for years to come off of that crazy invention.
Let's see
what else. You know, let me know if I need to stop, dude. I've been rambling for 20 minutes.
No, you're killing it. Keep going.
So that's the lockbox invention and the whole Shark Tank situation. But then now I have a couple new focuses. Obviously, any young entrepreneur realizes that or reads about having multiple forms of income is always key. And I realized that early on. So part of the reason I started my real estate, obviously I wanted the real estate to be my anchor form of income for years to come. I wanted to get into technology. Now that's another form of income, but a lot of people don't know I invest in a lot of other businesses. I own, you know, several other businesses. I'm in one now. You know, so I own a few different companies. I own the largest balloon garland installation company in Texas and hopefully soon to be the nation. Anytime you see a grand opening or, you know, a big birthday party and you see those balloons in the yards in the shape of a number, or at a, you know, at a convention, at a dealership, at a football stadium, if you're in Dallas, 9 times out of 10, it's probably my company, Balloon Therapy, that's doing it.
Really?
Super random investment.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that is random, but it's really cool.
A friend of a friend, you know, introduced this young lady to me, who was making these beautiful balloon garlands in her living room. And I went to some fundraiser, and I saw these balloon garlands, and I said, "Golly, these are beautiful. Who's doing it?" And then my friend was like, "Oh, it's that girl I wanted to introduce you to." So obviously, I met now my partner. Her name is Jessie. Super incredible, talented human being. But at the time, was doing all this out of her house. And I said, "Man, these are beautiful. Let's talk business, man. I love what you got going." So sure enough, we had a meeting, and she was able to tell me about, you know, what she was doing. And I was able to see the margins in this industry. So I said, "Hey, let's partner up." So she was doing it out of her house. Obviously I wanted to come correct. So we partnered, we got office space, we got fleet band, we got staff, we put some proper protocols and process and procedure in place. So in just a short year, we went from the new kid on the block to doing more in revenue than any other balloon business in Texas. Then I think 2021, we start franchising across the country. Our second location is opening up in LA Then we have Miami. Then I think we're doing Sacramento. You know, so on and so forth, man. There's a few different deals there. You know, so then, so that's another form of income. Obviously, you know, I mentioned earlier, I have a construction business. You know, I'm a licensed general contractor. When you flip so many houses, you end up having crews of your own. You know, and when people see, you know, one project, they hire you and your team to do other projects. So right now, we're building a house on White Rock Lake through my construction business. You know, but what I'm really excited about, to be honest with you, is investing. So we talked real estate, we talked technology, we talked events, we talked construction. My fifth form that I'm super excited about is investing in the, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Am I here? Okay, I got a call. Is investing in the cannabis industry. I'm here in Texas, so obviously I could see the cannabis movement, and it's still taboo in some people's eyes. You're in Austin, so probably not so much for people down in Austin. But in Texas, being a super conservative state, I saw what it was doing, not only from a revenue perspective, but just from an acceptance perspective. And as an entrepreneur, my formula has always been to be on time, you have to be early. You know, you got to take some risks, and you got to be early in the game if you want an opportunity to not only build awareness about a particular brand or get some leverage and some footholds in a new industry that you think is going to take off. So very rarely in one businessman's lifetime do new industries pop up right in front of your eyes. Obviously, in our generation, we've seen social media, you know, be created. But I think the other huge monster industry that's going to be creating a lot of wealth for generations to come is the cannabis industry. You know what I mean? Imagine the oil boom for our grandpas back in the day. You know what I mean? Some people probably thought that was going to be around for a year or two. You know what I mean? But it's made millions and millions for families. That's kind of how I'm viewing cannabis is personally for my family. It's just another investment in another industry. But I think it's going to be huge. So last year we decided to open up a few CBD shops just so we understood what it was like to run a brick and mortar. I'm actually in one of the stores now. You know, obviously our take is super high end, you know, really nice, beautifully done, you know, kind of Sephora vibe for the cannabis industry. Obviously we just sell CBD at the shop now, but we have a shop in Oklahoma that will be selling, you know, full cannabis products. And then I think we have two or three other shops opening up in Dallas. It's just another industry, another income stream, another opportunity. And then the last thing that I'm involved in, I think, is my personal business coaching. You know, I've been doing this now for almost 20 years, believe it or not. So I have a lot of experience. And I think so many people hit me up every single day for just advice here and there. So I wanted to create some content and an opportunity and platform for people to properly hit me up so I can help them kind of grow their business and grow their companies and scale and put processes in place and whatnot. So that's essentially what I do. I just bounce around from business to business looking for new opportunities. I want to get into the turf, artificial turf business. That's another goal of mine. You know, so we'll see, man. So Corey, man, that's it for me, man.
That is amazing. Jeez. That, yeah. Wow. I did not know you were up to all of that. That's crazy. No.
Yeah. Got
a few things. First of all, congratulations on everything that one you've done, you've accomplished, and everything that you're working on and working towards, because all of that sounds amazing and is super inspirational for me. I don't know about you, but like when I hear stuff like that, like I get fired up,
because I'm love like, it, bro. I'm not
right. So
love it. It's not always fun and games, dude. You know, when you have employees and you have payroll and you have, you know, you have landlords to deal with, and you have you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stress, and there's a lot of, you know, struggles, and a lot of weight. But there's a handful of us that are built for it, dude. You know what I mean? I think you're one of them. I think maybe some of your listeners are too.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, and they definitely are. But so how do you manage your time with all this stuff?
Yeah, so I'm getting better. I'm getting a lot better. And I think, you know, time is, it's one of those things, and at some point you'll have a partner that you want to spend time with. You'll have kids that you want to spend time with, even your parents and grandparents. You know, my 98-year-old grandma lives with me, you know what I mean? So it's always important for me to spend time with her, you know, for as long as I got her, you know what I mean? That's part of the reason we moved her in with us, just so I could see her every day. So time is absolutely, undeniably the most important thing. So what I found is in my business journey, if I really want to get 7 true forms of income, you know, you can't do everything in every business. So you've got to figure out, in my case, I had to figure out what I was good at. And what I realized is what I was good at is getting business started and executed, right? You know, now that I look at it, I feel like I can get a brand new business in any industry started and executed faster than any of my peers, only because I know the process, I know the people, I have the team, you know, I know, you know, how to attack essentially most businesses, regardless of if it's a B2B business or a direct consumer business. I feel like I have a pretty good lay of the land. Another formula that helps me kind of manage my time is each business needs a particular lead. You know what I mean? Each company has a particular lead. For my construction business, I have a general contractor that's my partner that manages the day-to-day. You know what I mean? All the big issues come to me, but the smaller issues he could manage. You know, my balloon business, my partner manages that. You know, my multifamily due diligence, I have a staffer that is doing all that due diligence for me. In the cannabis industry, I have partners and attorneys across the country that are doing a lot of the legwork, so I could just focus on what I'm good at. And I think as you start building your systems and processes, understanding that you need people, but if you can put essentially a head of each industry or a head of each company in place or a partner in each place, it allows you to do your thing, you know, while not letting anybody down. Does that make any sense? That seems to help me quite a bit.
Yeah, that's so. How do you kind of say I'm gonna take over the big picture stuff and you're gonna handle the day to day stuff? Is that kind of a more natural progression, or do you kind of have a sit down and all right, let's hash this out?
Yeah. So I'm a firm believer in I don't know if you guys, you know, watch old movies or not, but you know, in every movie or in every video game, there's a boss at the end of the level. Right. And for most of the movie, the boss is just sitting in the chair. You know what I mean? It's just sitting in the chair, watching everybody else do their thing, get beat up or whatever. But when you get to the boss and he gets out of the chair, you can see the boss has some skills. He's not just sitting in the chair. You know what I mean? So I'm a firm believer. That's a bad analogy. But the point is, I have to be able to do every single thing that every one of my employees can do. Does that make any sense? You know what I mean? I want to be able to drive the fleet van. I want to be able to give a construction quote. I want to be able to know what a price per foot is on a property. I want to be able to represent a seller just as good as a buyer. I want to know what our material cost is for a balloon or for product or for, you know, concentrate. You know what I mean? I'm a firm believer in, before I hire somebody to do it, I want to know how to do it myself. Because what a lot of entrepreneurs will find is if you don't know how to run every aspect of your business, then your staff has too much leverage. You know what I mean? And at some point in time, your staff is going to test you on that leverage, you know, whether it comes to a pay raise or leaving for a competitor or whatever. And that happens, you know, but you want to make sure as an owner of the company or the partner in whatever vision you're trying to execute, that you have a pretty good idea of how to do everything your staff is doing. But it's not worth your time to do, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and so kind of going on to the same thing of how you choose your people, how do you hire? How do you pick who you're gonna work with? What's some of your criteria and how do you go through that process?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. All of my businesses, even the tech company, is they're all relatively small businesses. You know what I mean? I haven't built any major enterprise companies. And I think
amount of employees that you have?
Say it again.
What's the most amount of employees that you have in one business?
I mean, it just depends. At one point from our tech company, when we were doing our real proof of concept, I want to say we had 10 or 12. For my balloon business, between installers and fabricators, I want to say we have 15 or so. Through the construction company, not including subcontractors, we have about 7 or 8. For some of our retail stores in the cannabis industry, I want to say we're at like, I don't know, 12 or 13. You know what I mean? Now, so for me, it adds up, dude. I mean, it adds up. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, you look at some of these companies with hundreds and thousands of employees. For me, that's just, you know, I'm sure one day when I have some gray hair or whatever is left of it, you know what I mean? I'll get to that point. But that's not necessarily how it works, guys. You know what I mean? I think my journey's more realistic than the dream of waking up one day, you have an idea for this particular deal or an idea for an app. You fly to California and then, you know, Zuckerberg and Mark Cuban say, hey, Corey, here's $20 million. And then you take that $20 million and you turn it into a $1 billion business. It's not really how, you know, I haven't met anyone that's had that formula just yet. You know what I mean? Mine has been in my market, in my industry, what opportunities can I look for? And how can I get a business off the ground? And my approach has always been, how can I get as far down the road without outside investment as possible, right? And that means you're creating small businesses, you know what I mean? And at some point, if your small businesses can create enough value, that's all you need to have a nice life for you and your family, you know what I mean? It really is. And if you really are in the right industry and you have the right systems and process in place, there'll be a big company that either wants to gobble you up or partner with you or merge with you or whatever. And then it could be an opportunity for you to exit or do whatever you want to do. But going back to your original question of how do you find these people? How do you hire? It's kind of a combination, dude. You know, I love giving young bucks opportunities. You know what I mean? I love giving young guys that aren't afraid of real work. You know, too many times, you see young people kind of just expect a lot. I like guys that want to get their hands dirty and don't mind getting punched in the face, so to speak, a little bit, especially when you're young, because that's what it takes to learn, you know? But then every once in a while, you'll have a business or a sector where experience, you don't have time to teach, and you don't have time to, you know, kind of baby a new young buck, right? In some instances, you need somebody with experience, so you have to kind of poach them from something else. What I found is, you know, everybody, it's finding when you're trying to poach an employee, you know, you find a I don't know, a skill set that a particular individual, maybe in another company, maybe even another industry, that you have a relationship with, right? So a friend of a friend of a friend, maybe use LinkedIn, maybe use Facebook. And then everyone's looking for an opportunity. Everyone's looking for either more money or to have a bigger role in a business or a company. So it's finding those people, and you got to sell them on your vision. You know what I mean? I have to sell every one of my employees. You know what I mean? Like I want them to understand that whether working with me is just a pit stop in their journey, that it'll be a well worth it pit stop. You know what I mean? If it's something long term, that they're going to have an opportunity to have more say, more opinion, and obviously more growth with working with me as opposed to not. But all over, dude, from Craigslist to hiring a headhunter, I've hired good and bad employees from both. You know what I mean? I think, you know, Craigslist gets a bad rap. I have some employees that I hired off Craigslist, you know, a decade ago that are still working with me today. You know what I mean? But then I've had employees that, you pay big bucks to get some, you know, hotshot, you know, manager, and then it doesn't work out in a few months. You know what I mean? So it just depends, you know, but kind of all over the place to answer your question.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So you talked a little bit about vision. How do you create one, your own vision, and then how do you kind of explain it to others? Because I think a lot of people, they want to try a lot of stuff. They have ideas of where they want to be and where they want to go, yeah. Which is a vague version of vision, but I think you definitely have a more concrete version, or at least a more concrete way of approaching it. And I think that vision, at least what I think, is the most, if one of the, if not the most important aspects to have in your kind of life or career trajectory, because yeah. That's how you can really kind of set your milestones, your benchmarks, and your metrics. Because without a really clear vision, it's hard to go about what you're going to do the next day, week, month, year. So how do you kind of put your vision together and go about it?
So I think a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make is you try to pitch someone on your own personal vision. And I think it's a mistake. I think, you know, a better path, whenever I'm interviewing somebody, the interview process is less about me and it's really less about the business. And it's more of, what are your goals and how can you working here help you in your goals, whether it's here or not? Does that make any sense? Like, very few people have a dream of working for a person their whole life. You know what I mean? Like, people think bigger and grander than that. In my case, I want every single person that I sit across the desk from or right next to understand that, hey, you're a part of my vision, but how can I be a part of your vision? Does that make any sense? It sounds cliche and it sounds dumb, but every single person that I'm sitting with.
I love dumb.
You know, for example, man, like let's say you were interviewing with me, you said, hey, Junior, I really want to be a part of X business. And I said, cool, Corey, great, awesome. You know, here's a little bit about the company. Here's a little bit about me. But hey, being a part of X company, how does that help you in your 10-year deal? You know what I mean? How does, you know, I want to position your role and your position and your pay and your title in this company to help you get to that next step. Now, if your next step is in this company, beautiful. Let's also make that happen. But if you coming to work for my ex company, how does that help you land your next job? Maybe I can put you on a fast track to this particular title to where now on your resume, this is going to give you a great opportunity in 3 years to go to X company. Now, if you're an employee, if you're a job candidate, and you have a boss that has that type of conversation with you, right? Like, hey, how can I prepare you to leave me? Pretty much, you know what I mean? You would say, damn, dude, I want to work with that guy. You know, this guy's pumped me up. You know what I mean? And for me, it's been fish in a barrel, so to speak. It's just, you know, I've had some people that I execute that plan. You know, literally, they're with me for days, months, you know, even, you know, years, but then they move on to the next one. I have a great relationship. I have a great review. I have, you know, a great partnership. If they leave and I still need help on something, they're willing to help and lend a hand. So that's been my approach with essentially hiring everybody, is getting to the root of how can them working with me help them with their vision or plan.
Gotcha. Perfect. Yeah. So we've got about 10 minutes left. So I wanted to do two things. I want to ask kind of some more or less quick fire questions that are just really good templates for getting some answers for you or from you. And then I want to hear kind of the inner personal story of your Shark Tank experience and kind of the fun stuff. I know you have some really cool like behind the scenes stuff. So we'll save the best for last on that. But what has been the most rewarding thing that for you that you've done in all your ventures so far? What's like that stood out for
rewarding
you?
Rewarding. It's tough. To be honest with you, I think it's a culmination. It's a culmination of everything. Obviously, you know, I don't know, and I think even this year, managing all these different businesses through a pandemic, you know what I mean? And trying to balance keeping the businesses going, keeping people paid, even when there's no business in some cases. You know what I mean? It's been rewarding to you know, hopefully make it through that, right? but then it's also rewarding having you know, a business that I started right when I got to Dallas still be, you know, up and running, you know, for several years now, and so many relationships and people that have worked for me and agents, and, you know, that's super rewarding. You know, the whole Shark Tank thing was super rewarding because, you know, I have no business being an inventor, like no business, but to take such a crazy idea that everybody has their own crazy idea and to execute it, to me, I'm proud of being able to prove that I executed such a crazy outlandish idea that involved so many pieces is pretty rewarding. But I think just in general, just the confidence that I have now is probably my favorite thing, is that you're not going to win. There's a lot of L's on my end. There's a few wins, but I've just learned so much, you know what I mean? For my age, you know, this is, I'm proud of making it this far. So
yeah, that's awesome. So I want to dig into that, what you just said, kind of the L's and the failure.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Give me, you know, what is like a major, I guess, failure, or was there a time where you thought everything was going to be falling apart, and how did you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, there was a major failures. I mean, dude, I mean, with my brokerage firm, I remember, I think it was like 2013, a few years before I invented the Torn Lockbox. I couldn't pay rent. I had some commissions that were due. And I think the deals got you know, either terminated or just extended past. And my landlord, I think, gave me a month or two. But then on the third month, where I couldn't pay rent, they locked my door. You know what I mean? Like, bro, like never in a million years would I expect to go to my office and have the doors locked, you know, but it was. And I remember that feeling just affected me just tremendous. You know what I mean? That's an L, you know, and I think it's an L that a lot of owners can, or, you know, business owners and retailers can relate to. Paying rent's a bitch, dude. Sorry. I don't know if I can say that on your podcast, but you know what I mean? In my case, I think it was 2012 or 2013. The real estate market was rebounding, but it was just a timing thing. It was just a timing thing. As you know, I think you're an agent. So you understand that once those deals are under contract, we need those deals to close, you know what I mean? And depending on what expenses or what you've done elsewhere, the timing can be off, and that, you know, so that was an L, you know. And then I say losses, but like every business, I would do something different. Like with my lockbox business, there's a lot of things I would do a lot differently. Like literally, you know, luckily it's a great business that I'm super, super proud of. But it was my first time really diving into the venture capital world, you know what I mean? And partnering with people that give you so much money has so many pros and cons to it. You know what I mean? There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that are out of your control. If I had to start a technology company again, I would do it way different. And I would protect myself from a leverage and legal standpoint a lot more than I did. You know what I mean? Sometimes following the dollar isn't always the best move. So although granted, a tour was a success in some circumstance, there's still meat on the bone. You know what I mean? There's a couple big opportunities that we didn't land. You know what I mean? A couple monster clients. And if I said the names, your jaw would drop that we had opportunities to land, and we couldn't land them because we didn't have the capital to build out what they needed us to build out in the time frame. You know what I mean? So to me, that's kind of an L. You know, all these new ventures, like in every business, I could essentially go down one by one and tell you a loss for each company, whether it comes down to running out of cash, when it comes down to doing a deal with the wrong person or the wrong group. When it comes to, you know, there's so many things, hiring the wrong person, you know what I mean? Buying the wrong inventory, setting the wrong expectations, you know what I mean? With partners or employees is probably the thing I get most embarrassed about, is when you set an expectation for something and you can't follow through. To me, that's an L, you know what I mean? And I look forward to sharing more of those L's. And the reason I think it's important is, I don't know, it's hard for an entrepreneur to talk openly about where you messed up, you know what I mean, and where you didn't get it right. And it happens at every single age. But I think it helps a lot of people. Number one, it helps them maybe avoid the mistake. But number two, and probably more importantly, it's relatable. You know what I mean? Like if we all really look deep at ourselves, we're not all what it's cracked up to be. You know what I mean? I'm looking at you like, Corey, dude, you're a badass. You're going to kill it. But I guarantee you, sometimes you're thinking, I'm not that tight, Junior, really, believe me. You know what I mean? I know that that's how I feel. So sometimes talking about the tough moments, some of the tough times, really gets people to relate and understand and trust you, because they know that it's just not all perfect and it's not all Instagram. Life isn't all, you know, social media perfect. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's humbling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it, exactly what you're talking about. It brings everything kind of back down to earth. You know, doing a lot of this stuff, it's very fun to think about and do and talk about and imagine. And especially from, you know, the outside looking in, everything may look great, but you on the inside in the active day to day, you know what's happening and you know you're 100%. Where
and it's not always great. And it's not always great. One of the coolest things from diving into the venture capital world and kind of the founder world is you start building relationships. And actually some of my biggest competitors for those few years wound up being good friends of mine, you know, because you go from, you know, and the same thing with real estate and being with a competing realtor or brokerage firm. Like some of my best friends in real estate or other brokers that I, you know, that started their brokerage firms. And at some point we were just bitter rivals. You know what I mean? Like we would poach each other's realtors and, you know, so on and so forth. We would go on the same listing appointments, are now some of my great friends. Same almost in every single industry. I know in the tech business, so many founders from so many different, you know, states and countries even, you could just relate because you all go to the same pitch competitions. You're all pitching the same venture capitalists. You're all going after the same big monster clients that you know, when one person takes an L, there's several other businesses that are taking an L as well. And when you win, the guys, you know, your competitors give you a congratulations, like, hey, dude, congrats on landing that fish, you know? So I don't know, man. I think it's an interesting thing that as I get older and I get more confidence in myself, I feel more comfortable talking about the things I'm not good at. And I think it comes with age. It comes with maturity. I'm not perfect. But when I was young, it was hard for me to talk about my losses publicly. You know what I mean? It was tough. So the sooner you can get to that point, the better, you know?
Right. So what would you say is your greatest strength, greatest weakness, and how do you kind of complement the two?
Yeah. Okay. My greatest strength is I have almost an unmatched ability to respect people's opinions and listen to critical feedback, but also move the fuck on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Not everything works out. I feel like I can get up and dust myself off faster and better than most people. And that's hard to do as an entrepreneur, because you have the entrepreneur that could do that, but essentially they're saying F you to everybody. Like, oh, your opinion doesn't matter, whatever, I don't care, I'm gonna do it anyway, you know what I mean? And you just go headstrong with your idea or your concept. But to do it while listening to feedback and other people's opinion, while moving forward, trying to execute your own vision and plan, I think that's probably one of my strengths. Probably a tangible strength is, and I alluded to it before, I feel like I could take a concept and turn it into a business faster than my counterparts. Does that make any sense? So if you and I, we sat in the room together and said, hey, we're gonna start a carpet business, right? I think I could legit have a carpet business incorporated with staff, with vans, with suppliers, with materials, insurance, inventory, website, marketing in place within probably 30 days. You know what I mean? From idea to, hey, now we're ready to go serve clients. You know what I mean? Pretty quick. So I think that's a pretty decent strength. And then my last strength would probably be awareness, self-awareness. You have to, not everybody works, not everyone reacts the same way to different, to sales tactics and approaches. You know what I mean? If you take 10 different people, it's going to take 10 different methods and ways to sell them on something. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Too many times, bad salesmen, you take one approach and you just use it every time. I think a salesman that is relatable has a different approach for every single person you're dealing with. You know what I mean? I think part of the reason Shark Tank is a good example of that is, you know, a pitch to Kevin O'Leary is a whole different pitch than a pitch to Barbara. And it's different than a pitch to Mark. You know what I mean? They all have different personalities. They all like and dislike different things. So that was just a perfect display of how to look at somebody's personality, do some research on what they like and what they don't like, and then pitch to them individually, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Biggest weakness. I have a lot of those, dude. A lot. I'm a numbers guy. I'm a major numbers guy, but I'm a big number guy, not a little number guy. Does that make any sense? I struggle with the dollars and cents, not necessarily the overall budget. Does that make any sense? It's harder for me to watch the little costs, like anything $100 or less that's on my bank statement or balance sheet. It's really hard for me to drive home and pay too much attention to. I'm more of a, I go straight to the bottom total kind of guy. You know, but that's why I hire bookkeepers and accountants and stuff to do everything else. But I'd say that's one of my biggest weaknesses is I'm not a small number guy. You know what I mean? And that's not always great. What else am I not good at? I'm not good at being a tough leader or boss. Excuse me. I'm not good at being a tough leader or boss. One of my biggest weaknesses, I like being friends with my employees and people that I work with. You know what I mean? Like, I want them to like me. You know what I mean? And in some instances, that's a bad move. You know what I mean? Sometimes you have to put your foot down and say, hey, I am the boss. You do what I tell you to do. It's just hard for me to manage like that. So I think there's been a couple opportunities where I either paid somebody too much because I like them, or I've been too nice without giving real strict, don't mess with me, I'm the boss. So that's a big, big weakness of mine. So yeah, that in addition to, you know, a lot of other things. Ask my wife or some of my managers. I can tell you, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, perfect. So I want to hear some of the fun behind the scenes stuff that people don't know what happens on the set or the casting or whatever, because I've heard your story front to back for it, but I would love for you to kind of go over it or give us some of the behind the scenes.
So the Shark Tank thing is it's the gift that keeps on giving. I'm thankful for, and I'm so surprised by how many people love it, watch it. I mean, I aired, you know, almost 4 years ago, believe it or not. And I mean, this weekend, walking down the street, hey, are you the guy from Shark Tank? I think it just so happens that my episode.
You get recognized from it?
Oh, bro, all the time. I mean, there's not a week. If there was a week that I went by without somebody asking me or saying something about Shark Tank, I'd be surprised.
That's awesome.
But I think the reason is my episode kind of reruns a lot on CNBC, so it kind of keeps me in the news. But every business person or entrepreneur loves that show, and that's kind of the mecca for pitching and presentations. And you know, can you handle it or not? So a little behind the scenes, what are some things that people don't know? Let's see. You actually get to see the sharks before you pitch. Whenever you get to the set and it's the day of shooting, you have to go inspect your set to make sure it's right before you actually walk out there. And that's when the sharks are doing, you know, their hair and makeup and everything else. So when I went out there to inspect my set, you know, the production company, nobody's shooting anything. Everybody's just getting stuff ready. They have this music going, right? And, you know, the sharks are there getting their, you know, their makeup done, and their marks on his cell phone. Everyone's texting and talking to assistants and, you know, doing hair and makeup. And music was playing. So I walk out there and I'm looking at my set and everything was good. And then the music was on and I was just vibing. I was getting in the zone, just like you are before a football game. So I just started kind of dancing a little bit, you know what I mean? There's some music. And then Barbara gets up and starts dancing a little bit too, right? So in hindsight, that's kind of a little behind the scenes moment that I think set the tone for, like, you know, all the sharks saw me. They probably in their mind said, oh, this guy's cool. This guy's cool. This guy's relaxed. This guy's like, this guy's going to be fun. Because before I walked in there for game time, they saw me setting up my set and I was just being really cool with the staff, like cracking jokes and like dancing and moving. And, you know, even though Barbara was farther away, we were doing a little air dance together. So that was a fun thing that kind of set the tone. That was fun. A lot of people don't understand there's several phases to getting on Shark Tank. There's about 5 different phases. Obviously, there's the audition. Then there's a video that you have to send in. Then there's a full legal review. Then there's a producer review. And then there's Shark Tank. I shot Shark Tank on a day with another group, and they never aired at all. So even when you shoot Shark Tank, it's still not a guarantee that you're going to air. They're going to air your episode, which is probably the worst thing, you know, unless you bomb, unless you do terrible, then it's good. you know, what's another thing about Shark Tank? It's so real, dude. It's so real. Like, people think that Shark Tank's like, oh, you know, you're not, you know, not every deal gets funded. You know, I know after my deal, the terms changed so much, you know, with the sharks, because after they do due diligence, as a proper shark should, they always try to get more equity and try to give less money. You know what I mean? So depending on your position of leverage, luckily I had all this hype from all these other venture capital companies that it gave me the leverage to make the decision that I felt was right. But you know, the deals will get done. It's just they don't look like the deals that are necessarily agreed to on TV. So that's an interesting thing about Shark Tank. Yeah, you know, I already mentioned there's multiple phases. I mentioned that it's super real. It's real money, real deals, real contracts.
One thing that I really loved when I heard you tell the story at the start at Red Raider Startup was what it was like and how weird it is. And I'll let you tell it when you actually walk out there.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's a couple of days of prep. But what's weird is there's zero music. Number one, there's no music. The doors that open automatically, there's actually people behind those doors, opening those doors automatically, but you get out there and you're 5 feet away, uncomfortably close to the sharks. I think what surprised me the most is when you're watching TV, it makes it seem like you're a pretty good distance away.
Yeah, it looks like they're like 20 feet away or something.
Yeah, it looks like you're social distance for sure. I'm sure these days you are quite a bit farther away, but it was like super, super close. And another weird thing, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know if it's weird or not, but when you're so close with somebody and you're looking at all the different sharks and they're all asking different questions, one of the weird things is who to focus on, because unlike some meetings, you focus on the person that's just talking to you pretty much. You know, when you're going to pitch or when you're going to, you know, if you're pitching a listing, if the wife's talking, you're focusing on the wife. If the husband's talking, you're focusing on the husband. But with Shark Tank, you have all these billionaires and they're all talking at the same time. You know what I mean? So you kind of have to pick and choose what you want to answer in kind of the order that you want to answer. So that was interesting to see how much they talk over each other. And obviously you see some of that on TV, but in reality, they're just always talking over one another because they're obviously the leaders in their own world and ecosystem. So they're used to having all the attention. What else? I mean, there's one thing, this probably isn't an experience, but it is some advice, is whenever you're pitching, and this is probably just business advice in general, whenever you're pitching anybody, if anyone's interested, they're going to dig deeper. So as they dig, you want your story to get better, not worse, if that makes any sense. So I think a mistake that a lot of people make on Shark Tank and other businesses is, you know, they're going to ask for the details. In my case, I always want to make it on the surface seem a little more conservative or a little more humble than as they start digging. For example, when I went on Shark Tank, Kevin asked me how many dollars or units have I sold, and I said zero. Strategically, most entrepreneurs would go there and they would say, oh, I sold 100,000 on Shark Tank, I sold this many in pre-orders. And then as they dig, they realize that, oh, it was just a pre-sale, or oh, it was, you know, on Kickstarter or whatever. But if you flip it, right, if you say, hey, I sold zero, and they say, oh, you've sold nothing? Well, actually, I mean, I sold 100 grand. Oh, you sold 100 grand. As you dig, it gets better and better and better. Yeah. Same thing with a real estate inspection, right? When somebody's touring a house and they see all these cosmetic things, right? Right when you walk in and you dig and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse, then you know you don't have a deal, right? But when somebody walks into the house and it looks perfect, and then they open up or they look under the sink and it just gets better, and you get on the roof and it just gets better and better and better, that's when you have a deal. Same approach when it comes to sales and pitching and presentations. But what else about Shark Tank, man? What else do you want to know?
I mean, that's pretty good. I thought the funniest thing that you said when I heard you tell the story a while ago was when you walk out there and you hit your mark, but then you got to switch the cameras over. So you just stand there.
Yeah. So you're right. So when you walk out there, not only are you so close, literally 7 feet away from Barbara Corcoran and Kevin, and they're staring at you. And the problem is, you get out there, it's quiet on set, so you can hear a pin drop. You're standing there for probably 3 minutes while they mic you up. They put the mics in place. They get all the cameras in place. So you're standing there probably for 3 minutes in front of the sharks, five feet away. You're not saying anything. They're not saying anything. They don't have any cell phones to distract them. They're just looking at you. They're looking at your prop display for 3 minutes. That 3 minutes felt longer than the entire hour and a half pitch, to be honest with you. Super awkward. You're right. I forgot about that. That's definitely the most awkward.
you scored that away in a deep corner.
Yeah, I compartmentalized that for sure.
That's hilarious. No, well, perfect. I mean, I want to be respectful of your time. One last question. What would you say to people that are looking to do more, looking to take maybe the first step or the next step and just continue on, you know, their path of progression? What is your advice for people listening?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of great entrepreneurs out there, and the game has changed so much. There's so many real entrepreneurs out there. I would find an entrepreneur that you kind of relate to, whether it's an entrepreneur that's similar in age or similar in experience or similar in your community, and watch what steps they took. You know what I mean? Watch what steps they took. You know, obviously we can get inspired by so many people online. And I think that's a great thing to do. But finding a local entrepreneur that you could see how they did it, and then putting your own spin on it, I think is great. And with technology now, there's so many YouTubers out there. There's so many just entrepreneurs with great content, whether that's Instagram, whether that's YouTube, whether it's a podcast like you're doing now. There's so many great nuggets that you can get for zero cost or for a couple $100. You know what I mean? Like if I had to start all over again, I would probably, and I had a $5,000 budget to start a business, I would spend $2,000 on courses just from entrepreneurs and real estate investors and whatever. Because if you take enough courses, you'll see what multiple people are saying that that's the same. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it just saves you so much time, like so much learning, like the nightmare learning that I had. There were no podcasts back in my day. There was no YouTube back in my day. So you literally just had to get out there and do it. You know what I mean? I remember, you know, when we wanted to flip our first house, we had to go to the bookstore. We had to go to Barnes and Noble to buy a Home Renovations for Dummies is literally what we had to buy. Like legit, that was our Google, that was our podcast, that was our, was Home Renovations for Dummies was what me and my buddy Ross used to flip our first house. Now we would be able to look at other seasoned real estate investors, see what they're doing, maybe pay $200 to take a course and get all the good stuff, and then white out their name, put our company name on it. Now we're ready to go get funding. Now we're ready to go do all of those things. You know what I mean? So I would encourage young entrepreneurs, if you have little dollars, spend the little dollars learning from people that are already winning, and then your remaining dollars to start executing on your vision or plan. Understand that multiple forms of income is the goal, not just one. You know what I mean? If you're a real estate guy, it's important once you reach a certain level to start diversifying into other stuff. You know what I mean? You know, so that would be my advice.
Perfect. Well, Junior, cool. Thank you so much for coming on to the Join Your Podcast. That was an amazing episode. I'm sure everybody's going to absolutely love it. Thank you again.
That's what's up. Corey, you're my brother, dude. I'm proud of you, man. And let's be in touch, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll reach out again soon.
All right, man. See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
Hey, everybody, Corey Mortensen. Thank you so much for listening to the latest episode of the Jordan Year Podcast. I hope you enjoyed my latest guest, Junior Desnoyer, who is a serial entrepreneur out of Dallas. And I hope you enjoyed hearing his story and his background with his experience on Shark Tank. And I know it's so cool to hear something like that, the behind the scenes, how it came to be, what it's actually like, as well as all the stuff that he's working on and all the lessons that he was more than happy to share with me and with all of you. Please reach out. Let me know if you guys have any questions, if you guys have any guest suggestions or things that you would like me to ask more about or dive more into. Let me know. Your feedback is so important to me. But thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And again, share. I want this to be a podcast that everybody has the opportunity to listen to, because I think that the lessons are so important. But anyway, Corey Mortensen, joining your podcast. I hope you guys have a great day, and until next time.